The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast, quick reaction show for the Chargers and Seahawks in Seattle. The Seahawks lose 25-17. They have a shot at the end to get a touchdown and then potentially go for 2 points and then potentially go into the overtime at the end. But David Moore bounces off his hands and the Seahawks get the 25-17 loss.
Tweet! Foul! Flag! Throw it on you, Brandon, for a intro that was far too long, because I figured we'd just start this podcast out with a penalty, just for good measure. And I'm not just saying like penalties that were terrible calls that went against the Seahawks, but I'm talking about self-inflicted penalties along the way as well. And I mean, that's one of the big stories of the game. I've got a few notes written down. Frustrating. Russell Wilson comes back after having a shaky first half. And really a shaky first three quarters, and then comes back and leads the team back, and you know, real close to having David Moore come down with the reception there, but put themselves in a hole.
I mean, you could even say shaky fourth quarter to him too, because the defense in this game, while they struggled a little bit in the first half, they held the Chargers scoreless in the second half. They came up with big stops when they needed to with Phillip Rivers in the fourth quarter, but it was a Russell Wilson interception that allowed the Chargers to get the 6 points in the end. And so you compound the 6 point gift by Russell Wilson with the gifts of the Chargers missed kicks on extra points. And they continue to struggle through this game too. A healthy Chris Carson would have been a big difference in this game. Instead, 8 rushes, 40 yards. Mike Davis got majority of the carries, 15 carries, 62 yards. It's really hard to pinpoint where it went wrong when there are so many phases of the game where it went wrong, whether it was defense for the Seahawks in the first half, whether it was Janikowski missing a field goal in the second quarter, and just the inability to really move the ball by the offense.
Well, I will say this, that we always go through that little mantra that Pete Carroll throws out there. Can you win the game in the first quarter? Can you win the game in the second quarter? Can you win the game in the third quarter? You can win the game in the fourth quarter. Well, here's the thing. You can lose the game in the second quarter. And to me, when I'm looking back at this game, that's where the Seahawks really lost this game. You look at those final two possessions there, or the two possessions before the final possession where they got the field goal. Those were possessions where the offense had an opportunity to kind of take control of this game and really change the game. And you might say, well, you know what? They would have if they wouldn't have been screwed over by penalties. Okay.
Well, I think you mentioned it, Adam. I think you said those were two critical stops by the officials in the second quarter.
They were. But with that said, you have the opportunity to overcome those bad calls. So, for example, on the OPI call, which I'm just dead convinced that there is a league mandate that we are the only team that gets called for pick plays on offense, even when they're not picks. Now, let's put that aside. They get called for it, fine. Backs them up, fine. They end up having to go for a field goal attempt, make the field goal.
Right.
Like, that puts you in a very different situation.
And it puts it in a very different position at the end of the game, too.
Totally. And so could this. The next drive, they go, and they're starting to move the ball down the field. Fluker gets called for unnecessary roughness. Very questionable.
Questionable.
I disagree, but that sets you up on I believe it was a 3rd and 8.
I don't think the officials know what unnecessary roughness even means, because there was that play, and then there was the Britt play where they decided not to blow the whistle. Then they give us an unnecessary roughness call where Russell Wilson gets hit when he just released the football.
Right, let's put a pin in that for half a second, because I'd love to circle back to that. But kind of getting back to the point of overcoming the bad calls and having the opportunities to do that, like that's what's on you. I don't like to whine about officiating, right? Like, I mean, you don't either. It's weak. But so now you're in third and eight after the Fluker call. Russell Wilson has, I believe, Lockett on the slant. I can't remember specifically, but just flat misses him.
Yeah, Russell missed him.
You complete that throw, you continue the series, and you go down and hopefully score some points. To me, right there, it was that sequence that really changed this game to where then the Chargers got up by enough to where it was difficult for the Seahawks to continue to pound the rock. And not only that, it was difficult for them to pound the rock without Chris Carson. We can see the difference that he makes. But let's talk about, you know, do the officials understand the difference in unnecessary roughness? Okay, look. The first call on Fluker, I'm looking at that and being like, all right, guys, whatever, but fine, I guess. I mean, that's, if you're going to call that, you'd call that on about every third NFL play that's ever run.
Well, the dude got locked into Fluker and he just went down and, you know, was like trying to not to injure the running back that he was tripping over.
The intention of that call is if, say, the play is over by a few beats, right? And like an offensive lineman comes up and blasts you.
Like Britt.
But the play wasn't over with Britt.
Well, it was kind of over. They just didn't blow the whistle.
But here's my thing. This is why I'm angry at Britt.
Yeah.
Because at that point in the game, like, you have to realize these officials are calling it a certain way. And you have to adjust to that.
Exactly.
So while a ticky-tack call on Britt, to be honest, I mean, that's good, clean football, what Britt did there. There was nothing wrong with that. But you could see the officials were not going to allow that. You can't do that then.
It ends up being relatively balanced in terms of calls. 10 calls on the Seahawks for 83 yards, 12 calls on the Chargers for 105 yards. And a big part of that 105 yards was the final pass interference call in the end zone against Tyler Lockett, which the way they had been calling the game all game, it was interesting because I was so frustrated that they called the pick play when Moore didn't even get his hands up on the defender. But yet, pass interference calls like that, they hadn't been calling those all game until that moment on Tyler Lockett in the end zone.
If we're going to be fair about calls and say that the referees were bad in this game, let's take that as a whole, right? Not just against us, but also against the Chargers.
Oh, yeah, both ways.
So earlier in that drive, that call on Melvin Ingram, he hits him in the ribs.
Yeah.
The top half of his body, I guess, falls on Russell Wilson's legs. It was within a step of him releasing the ball. I mean,
I didn't get that call at all.
That's a terrible call. Now, it went in our favor, but that was a bad call.
Right.
Now, as far as the pass interference goes, he totally hooked Tyler Lockett's arm well before he started getting in his face when the ball arrived.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
So that's a legit.
It was a legit call. I'm just saying there were so many times in the game before that where you saw similar plays on both sides, whether it was a Chargers defender or a Seahawks defender. They just weren't calling those until that particular play.
Interesting. I did not notice that, but I'll take your word for it, and I'll totally agree with you. But that wasn't something that came up to my eye test there.
Yeah.
But, to me, it was that end of the second quarter, right in there, when you knew the Chargers were going to get the ball back at the beginning of the third. That, to me, was the turning point in the game. Now, a lot of people will point to the pick six that Russell threw, and I would like your opinion on this, actually. I was curious what you think. What was your thought process as far as what Russell Wilson did there?
It looked like he threw the ball short, and there were two defenders right there.
Okay, so this was what I thought immediately after watching that pick. So the defender that was on, who was the out route? Who was running the out? Was it Baldwin?
I thought it was Moore on that side.
So Moore runs the out, and his defender sticks with him. And it would have been open if just you're only reading that defender.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the slot defender, I believe, on Baldwin that totally let Baldwin go and then snuck under the route and picked the ball off. So to me, that's less on Russell Wilson. I think that's a throw that he makes 9 times out of 10 and something that's within the offense. That's a Gus Bradley interception.
Okay.
Gus Bradley knows Russell Wilson. Gus Bradley knows the tendencies of this offense, which we've kept the majority of that offense intact with Brian Schottenheimer coming on board as offensive coordinator. So he knew in that situation, that's where Russell wanted to go. And so he ran a game in the secondary and it got him. That was a Gus Bradley pick. That was beautifully done by him. So I don't put that a ton on Russ. That was game study That was film study. That was somebody who knew this team and knew our quarterback inside and out. And that was a huge play.
Well, and when you're up 19-10, I suppose you can take those kinds of chances. But it did look like Russell had no idea that the defender was going to be there underneath. And maybe he was going for the back shoulder. And
well, he thought it was man. He thought it was man across the board. And they disguised their coverage well. And instead, the defender drops off of Baldwin and steps in front of the ball. That was a backbreaker.
Yeah, it was. And a tough day for David Moore overall. You mentioned the drop in the back of the end zone on the final play of the game, but 7 targets in this game, just 2 catches, 16 yards. A rough, rough day for him after having such a good game last week against Detroit.
Well, he is playing essentially his first year out on the field. I mean, again, we've talked about this a million different times. It's not a continual, gradual ascent to awesomeness. Right. Like, occasionally you're going to have some dips, right? That was a difficult ball to catch in the end zone. He was laying out.
Yeah. It looked like 2 guys may have got their hand on it.
No, only one. The first guy definitely did not get his hand on it. But the second guy did. And I mean, changed it just enough. That was a difficult catch. Also, Tyler Lockett, that's a difficult catch in the end zone. But you got to make it. You got to make it.
Yeah, he nearly came down with it, too.
Yeah, you just got to make it. And all of a sudden, this game's different.
Well, a lot of people ding in the Seahawks for clock management, too, at the end of the second quarter. And it actually worked out fairly well for them there in the toward the end of the game, because they still had 3 timeouts, able to get the stop on Rivers, able to get the ball back and drive down the field. But
well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. You want to bang on Seattle on that second to last drive there that took up, I don't know how many minutes, but I mean, started with like 6.5 left on the clock and ended with just over 2?
Just over 2, yeah.
Yeah, so like a 4-minute drive down the field. Look, I mean, this team is not built to be an explosive offense that can go down and score in 42 seconds. That's not who we are. The fact that they got down there at all, managed to get the touchdown and like keep it close, get the ball back and actually have a chance in the end. Like, I'm really not mad at the clock management there. They used all the resources that they have at their disposal to get the ball down the field in the best way that they could and gave us a shot.
Well, and the one thing that's hard to tell without looking at the film is just how well the receivers were covered up down the field. And when I look at the stats and I see that the Seahawks were only averaging a little over 5 yards per pass, that tells me that the Chargers are doing an awfully good job at covering dudes down the field.
Yeah, they definitely were playing to not give up the chunk play. And the only way that you're going to suck them up closer to the line of scrimmage to get those over the top is to run the ball with efficiency. And it just didn't happen today. Now, I will give Schottenheimer credit. They kept trying at it. They really did, even after Chris Carson went out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I look at this game, I'm not mad at Schottenheimer.
And they had another great drive to start off the game, too. Just driving it right down the field, getting the touchdown, hitting Jerron Brown. You know, that was really the best way they moved the football all game long.
Well, that's the difference Chris Carson makes right there. I mean, you could tell.
And they mixed in Mike Davis a little bit in that first drive, but.
Right, but you could tell they had to start going away from Carson because his injuries are inhibiting him.
Yeah.
And so you could tell the difference in the run game there. I was kind of hoping, in all honesty, that they'd get a little bit more to Penny on the perimeter, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
If we want to talk about this game in its fullest, like to me, like Russ on third down was terrible up until the end of the game when it came to those last 2 drives. I mean, he missed that 3rd and 8, and then he had a 3rd and long that he underthrew, I believe it was Jerron Brown, that was open, steps up in the pocket and tries to feather it in there and just misses. And I mean, again, I believe that was near the end of the second quarter. So to me, that's the area of the game that I look at and go, wow, that's a problem.
Yeah, 26 of 39 on the day for Russell, 235 yards, 2 touchdowns. He had the 1 interception. And then you look over at Phillip Rivers, and while he was good through the first 2 quarters of the game, you know, they were able to hold him pretty well in the second half. Just 2 of 9 on 3rd down conversions for the Chargers in this game. 13 of 26 for Phillip Rivers for 228 yards, so completed just half of his passes and had the 2 touchdowns.
You could see in the first half that they were getting those 12-yard crossers, those 15-yard crossers, and some of those deep shots. I mean, obviously, they got the touchdown over the top somewhere in there. And that was what set up everything later for them to be able to run the ball with Melvin Gordon.
Well, speaking of touchdowns by the Chargers, there was a questionable one to me in this game. And it was the right before the Seahawks had the final drive at the end of the second quarter. Phillip Rivers throws it out to Mike Williams and does a great job of dancing right along the sideline. And it looked like his heel went out in almost three different places. Yet the officials let it go and call it a touchdown. They review it and still call it a touchdown.
So one of the things that I believe to be true in life is that when you see something with your own eyes, then it's true. And I watched that play. I watched Mike Williams, like you said, dance around the sideline there, but he didn't really dance around it. Like, all right, a couple steps that by video you couldn't tell were not exactly out of bounds. Maybe his heel was up. But then you see the replay and you see after he does about four of those steps along the sideline, and there was one step that was clearly out. Like, clearly. Like, I mean,
I got hung up on it because I kept watching. Was it Trey Flowers? I kept watching Trey Flowers hold on to his other leg and waiting to see if that leg went down out of bounds. And so I was so focused on that that my wife goes, oh, well, his heel's out right there. And I go, no, I'm looking at his back foot. You can't really see it. She's like, no, look at his front foot. It's out of bounds.
Yeah, this is why Emma's smarter than you. Like, and it's why I love her. Like, I mean, seriously, like you looked at that and there was a clear and undeniable frame of Mike Williams' heel stepping out of bounds. And yet that was called a touchdown. Now, with that said, in hindsight, that might have been the better thing to have happened, because at that point, then they were allowed to have the time to come back down and then score.
Right. Because it was a minute 10. The only thing that would have made it different is if the defense holds up there and holds them to a field goal. And I guess Caleb Sturgis did make that one. That was the one extra point that he made. But dude was missing kicks all over.
Well, yeah, he couldn't he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn at 5 feet, you know, I mean, for sure. But
so if it's 15-7 going into halftime instead of 19-10, I guess that's not that big of a difference.
Well, it would help.
It's 8 points instead of 9, I guess.
But it was just one of those blown calls by the officials. I just didn't think this was a good game by the officials overall. It calls against us, clearly, but also some calls against the Chargers. And it's poorly officiated.
And being up 19-10 going into the second half, that's really what set him up to run the ball more with Melvin Gordon in the second half.
Now, I said coming into this game, I feel like you were on the exact same page with this. You had the same exact thought process that you had to limit those explosives. And at some point during the game, they flashed up a graphic of 10-plus yard plays, and they had like 14 of them. It was insane.
Yeah.
And they managed to come out, make adjustments in the second half, give Ken Norton credit without Bradley McDougal, keeping those big gains at a minimum short of Melvin Gordon just chewing us up in the running game at that point.
Yeah, 7.3 yards average per carry for Melvin Gordon on the day, 16 rushes, 113 yards overall, had that 34-yard run. That was one of the toughest series for the Seahawks, right, where they get the
15.
Yeah, and what was it, 54-yarder to Keenan Allen over the middle, and then the very next play, and Melvin Gordon's run it in from 34 yards out?
Why is it, as a Seahawks fan, I see third in 12, 15, 22, and I'm like, they're getting this.
But really, I mentioned third down conversions, 2 of 9. That one play was the
one. You can't give up third and 15.
No, you can't, and especially a play like that.
That's about as bad as it gets, and you know, when I'm looking at that first half and them opening it up through the passing game and where that really, I think at the end of the day, the place that the blame falls on for that is the pass rush. There was no pass rush today until the very end of the game. I mean, just none. I mean, Phillip Rivers had all day to sit back there and throw the ball. Give Phillip Rivers time. See what happens. I think you saw it.
But the good thing, Adam, is now we can end the show on a high note.
Yeah.
The New Orleans Saints, 45-35, getting the win over the Rams.
It's so hard to squander that. It's so hard to squander that, you know?
Yeah, I know.
And now you got the Rams mad coming in next week.
I suppose. I don't look at it quite that way, that they're going to be mad necessarily. But it does feel a little bit like they've squandered it, because the Rams have a really tough stretch of games, taking on the Saints, then Seattle goes down, and then the Rams have to take on the Chiefs. So, you know, this was the Seahawks' opportunity. If they get a win here, they could have really put some pressure on the Rams over these next three games. Now, it's kind of feeling like that pressure, it's not going to be there.
I guess not.
You can still, in the sense, for the Seahawks, they have a big opportunity now going into the Rams in this next game. You get a win over the Rams, and then still, if the Chiefs are able to beat the Rams down in Mexico City, the Rams are going into their bye with a three-game losing streak. And, you know, if the Seahawks could pick it back up, they take on the Rams and they come back home to face the Packers, it could still get interesting.
I'm not saying that we're out of this yet.
Yeah. It just feels like a missed opportunity.
Very much so. And the other thing is we've seen that every time the Seahawks has gone up against a good team, one of the good teams, we come up a play or two short. And there's a bunch of hidden yardage all throughout that game, whether it's illegal shift penalties because they were in the hurry up and Tyler Lockett's running out there and he's not quite set and Russ takes the ball. It's like we got to be sure to like clean up all those little things, like J.R. Sweezy getting a false start the last play of the game. I mean, come on, man. Like all these procedural penalties, those got to go away. They have to go away. We're not the type of team that overcomes those things. I mean, we talked about it earlier in the podcast. Like there were opportunities to overcome bad calls and they just didn't do it. Now, as much as I bang on Russ, understand that, like, I think both of us drive the Russell Wilson bandwagon. Neither one of us want him to not be our quarterback.
Yeah.
For the next 10 years. I love Russell Wilson. He's amazing. But some of the three sacks? Is that what ended up with Russell Wilson today?
Four sacks.
Okay. Well, at least three of them are on Russ. I know that for sure.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to get rid of it. That popped back up in this game. It was so close. Let's talk about some positives. How about Bobby Wagner in coverage? Holy crap. Like all over the field. He is a Terminator out there. It's unbelievable. I mean, he can cover anybody and smother them, and then he's thumping people at the line of scrimmage. B-Wags had himself a game.
I thought Coleman played pretty well, if we're calling out people on defense.
He's okay. I mean, I don't know that you can point at anybody in the secondary and been like, awesome job. I mean, Trey Flowers got eaten up quite a bit, made a big play at one point in the game, too, that saved a touchdown. So good on him.
Yeah.
I thought the defense as a whole, they did their job. Like, I mean, even when McDougald went out, like I was pooping my pants when McDougald went out. And it seemed like the running game for the Chargers was ignited right about then.
You know, one thing is going back to the running game for the Seahawks. Man, in that first and second quarter, it felt there were so many plays where the Chargers were just getting the shoelace tackle. And if not for that tackle, the Seahawks would have had some huge gains in this game.
Yeah, it's possible.
So close. It was so close a couple times.
Well, early in the game, it was very apparent that the offensive line was the more physical unit. And I'll give the Chargers some credit to adapting to that later on in the game. They really did start to bow up there, especially beginning of the third quarter. I mean, we couldn't run the ball at all beginning of the second half. Let's talk about another bright spot in this game. You know who kept us in this game? Like about as much as Russ after his pick six and, you know, doing his heroics? Michael Dixon.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Dixon kept us in this game. Like, let's not get it twisted. He had booming punt after booming punt and pinned the Chargers back and gave that defense an opportunity for stop after stop after stop. I mean, he flipped field position multiple times. Michael Dixon had himself a whale of a game. If I'm giving out game balls, ding, yeah. Michael Dixon's one of my guys.
He had that one inside of the five where it just kicked out of bounds just at the right moment and had another 60-yarder. Yeah, big game for him. The other guy bouncing back from last week's game, Doug Baldwin. 4 catches, 77 yards. and including that 42-yard catch, which Russell, one of Russell's best passes of the day to Baldwin on the left side there.
Oh, it was a beautiful pass. You were hoping for more out of that drive.
Right.
I mean, wasn't that the drive that we got OPI on?
Yes.
Yeah, that was...
Because that was another catch by Baldwin that got taken off the board. He had the 3rd and 3 there where Moore got called for the OPI.
So,
see, I was trying to do positive and then you brought it back. Why did you do that?
Well, it's just, it's so maddening to watch like Moore run a route, stop, without engaging the defender at all.
Yeah, didn't even put his hands on the defender. His hands not touch the defender.
No,
the defender ran into him.
I don't understand it.
That was a bad call. That's how you understand that. That was a terrible call.
It's just really difficult to swallow the idea that the Seahawks keep coming up short against the better teams. Like, I mean, we're right there. It's not like we're out. So that makes me wonder, are we a decent, good team? Are we just the best of the bad teams?
I think we're going to find out over this next 3-game stretch.
Here it is. It's on.
One other place where we won? Time of possession. 35, almost 36 minutes to 24.
Yeah, that's because the Chargers were gouging us, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they did not do a great job of limiting explosive plays in key moments. And you saw Phillip Rivers do Phillip Rivers things. I mean, this is why both of us were like, I don't want to see this guy right now.
Nope.
I just don't.
And we saw him. He was there.
You know, one thing that was infuriating is at a point in the game after like every call had gone against us and watching him cry about not getting a pass interference call. Like, I just want to slap his bolo tie right off of him.
That was the same call where his offensive lineman held Jamie Martin so badly that Phillip Rivers didn't get lit up on that play. And I thought, dude, You're crying about the offensive pass interference. You should be thanking your offensive lineman for making sure you didn't get crushed.
Jacob Martin comes screaming off the line, beats his man. He's right there. I'm screaming at the screen. How is that not a hold?
And the flag came in so late.
Yeah. It was almost like the refs were finally like,
okay,
all
fine.
Right, that one, yeah, like, we'll give you I that might one. Get fired if I don't call that one. I guess I'll have to.
All right, Adam. Well, we do have the Rams game coming up next Sunday, and I am going to try and make it down to Hermosa Beach for the Seahawks Hermosa Beach takeover. And what do you say we bring on Cedric to talk a little bit about what's going to be going on down there in Southern California?
Dude, that sounds awesome. I hope you have a ball down there, and we'll unpack a lot more of this in the regular show, but enjoy what Cedric has to bring. And Brandon, I expect to hear you screaming, Seahawks in the LA Rams stadium and taking that whole thing over.
Oh, well, let's see. I'm not going to be at the stadium, but I am going to expect other people to be doing the same.
Wait, you're not going to the game?
I'm going to be there on Saturday before the game.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to get to the game.
No, too. I'm going to be in the car driving on Sunday. But
well, I still expect you to take over the stadium. Cedric does too. Let's see what Cedric has to think.
And now with the Chargers game behind us, although we're recording this before the Chargers game, I bring on Cedric Morris.
Hey, hey.
How you doing, man?
Doing pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm well. It's been too long since we've had you on the show, but now that the next game up is against the Los Angeles Rams and you guys are having a party down there in Southern California, I figured it was time to hit you up and get you back on the show.
Yeah, man. It feels good. I think last time I was on the show was more about the Chucky Soup deal.
Yeah.
That I put out there. But yeah, this time, yeah, man, we're going to have a great little party down here.
Last time you were on TV and now you're throwing a party. It sounds like at Hermosa Beach on Saturday and then doing a little tailgating on Sunday before the Rams game too. Tell us about what you guys got going on.
Yeah, man, you got it. Hermosa Beach, we do that almost every year. It's like the third annual. Starts at 11 o'clock. You pretty much do a Hermosa Beach takeover. It's down on Pier 8 at Hennessy's. We have Chris Warren down there. So Chris Warren's going to be signing some autographs for like $20 each, starting at 1 o'clock until about 2:30, 3 o'clock. The whole event will last from 11 until about 6 or when, you know, people start kind of going away. But yeah, so we've been doing that for the past 3 years, and it's been great, man. It's like on Hermosa Beach, just right there, the whole beach is just Seahawk blue. So,
man, how'd you guys pull it off to get Chris Warren there? Of the early 90s, I had two favorite running backs, and it was Emmett Smith and it was Chris Warren. Those are my two guys.
Oh, there you go. Perfect, right? It's funny because, you know, I've been doing things for a long time. And back in the day, for about 5 years straight, we had a Wounded Warrior charity where we had, like, you know, Dave Craig down, Jim Zorn down. One of them was Chris Warren, you know. So Chris Warren loved it so much that the following year, we had John Lowe Williams. And Chris is like, well, I'm coming too. So I was like, well, come. So we had them both at the same time, the same place. And it was great, too, because, you know, they'd go outside, whatever else, for a little bit, just to cool off because the backstage gets really packed. When they walk in, guess who's leading? Yeah, that's right. John L. Williams with Chris Warren right behind him. So it was just like watching, like, old ball.
So perfect. John L.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome, man. Awesome. So that's how we got Chris, man. And, you know, Chris called me about 3 weeks ago and said, well, what's going on? So I let him know, and he's like, yeah, I'll be there. And I was like, Chris, perfect. Let's do it. So, man, he's a great guy, man. He's a great guy.
So if I want to make sure that I get there in time to get the Chris Warren autograph, it's 2 o'clock, right? 1 o'clock.
Well, 1 o'clock. So the autographs start at 1 o'clock until about 2 o'clock, 2:30. The whole thing starts at 11. So you can get there early, get set up. We're on the beach, and we also have this spot called Hennessy's, which happens to be our South Bay Seahawks bar. So it's right there on the corner on the beach. So we're all kind of the same area. Pier 8 and the Strand. That pretty much means Pier 8 and the beach.
Well, I had to ask on time because I'm driving all the way down from Montana and leaving Friday. So I got to time this out to make sure that I'm there in time.
Yes, you do, man. So be there by 1 o'clock and you'll see Chris.
Well, I wish I could join you for the game, but the Saturday event is definitely where I want to go. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about how you're feeling about the team so far. Now, we don't have the benefit of seeing how they looked against San Diego, but, you know, so far 4-3, coming off a 2-touchdown win over Detroit. How are you feeling about the Seahawks this year?
Well, I'm feeling great. I got to tell you, there's this little voice in my head that sometimes tells me things. His name is Sid Radames. I don't know if you heard of this guy before, but he's a cool dude. I don't know who he is, but every now and then he comes to my head and he told me when this year started that our record would be 10-6 and we'd be in the playoffs.
I like it.
So I don't know, man. It's looking like we might be better than 10-6. So let's see how it turns out. But I feel good, man.
All right. So for Seahawks fans that are going to be down in L.A., you've been to a few games there now. What can, if for somebody who hasn't been to a game at the Coliseum, what can they expect as a Seahawks fan?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, the first few years Rams came back, the Rams fans didn't exist. So, I mean, you go to the stadium, it'd be like half Seahawks, or if it's whoever they're playing, whether it's Dallas, whatever else, it'd be, well, it was Dallas, like pretty much all Dallas fans. But now, of course, you got the bandwagon. We know what that's about. It happens sometimes. So, you know, you're going to see about a little over half Rams fans there. From my experience, they're not rowdy. They're not rowdy. It's a good experience. The Coliseum is a terrible stadium, but, you know, beyond that, it's not going to be hot. If it was like a game in September or October, it's awful because there's no shade at all in that stadium. It's ridiculous. But a game in November, it'll be good.
All right, man. Well, one more time, what's the best place to go for folks to get information on the upcoming events down there?
SoCal Seahawks Facebook page. You'll see it there. You can go to Eventbrite, type in LA and then Seahawks and tailgate, something like that. It'll show up immediately. Our tailgate, by the way, starts at 9 o'clock. Chris Warren will also be there signing stuff for $20, a signature. He'll be there from about 11 o'clock until the game starts. He might be there earlier, but he's coming to both events, which is awesome. Our spot is on State Drive. It's right behind the Science Center. And if you just look up either SoCal Seahawks, or go to Eventbrite and type in Seattle, Los Angeles, Rams, any of those words, combination of those words, it'll come up and you can buy a ticket there. The tickets are cheap. It's only $5 for the tailgate and it's only $5 for the Hermosa thing. So I just want to make sure it was family friendly so that if you have a family of four or whatever else, you can come hang out and not spend too much money for both events. So it should be a good time. At the tailgate, if you pay at the door when you get there, then it's $10, but as long as you pay online, it's It's five bucks.
All right, man. Well, I look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Really appreciate you coming on and talking about it.
Yeah, man, of course. I appreciate you having me on here, for sure.
We can't wait so long next time.
Right. I mean, it should be a yearly thing, right?
I know, right. I need to do better. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
So thanks to Cedric, and a big game coming up for the Seahawks against the Rams. The Seahawks are 4-4. They'll be taking on the 8-1 Rams. And Adam, I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.